This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest Parker Posey became well known in the world of independent film for her roles in Dazed and Confused, Party Girl, Kicking and Screaming, The Day Trippers, Henry Fool, and Personal Velocity. But she also co-starred in this year's big budget film, Superman Returns. She's been in three mockumentaries directed by Christopher Guest: Waiting for Guffman, a satire of community theater; Best in Show, a spoof of the dog competition circuit; and A Mighty Wind, a send-up of over-the-hill folk singers. Now she's co-starring in a new comedy directed by Guest called For Your Consideration. It's about a group of not very talented actors making a film who are stunned to hear that one blog is talking Oscars. The actors prematurely prepare for their nominations. The film the actors are making is called Home for Purim. It's set during World War II in a southern town where a family is reunited during the Jewish holiday when two adult children come to visit their dying mother for the first time in many years. The son is in the military. The daughter, well, she's a lesbian and she's brought her lover home, which does not please her mother. Here's a scene from the film within the film. Parker Posey plays the daughter. Catherine O'Hara plays her mother.
What did I do that was so wrong? Wanted my daughter to grow up to be a mama of her own with a house full of babies and a decent man to cherish and take care of. You just didn't want the boys around, Rachel. What kind of girl doesn't want to meet a nice fella? How many invited the best ones over, the ones whose daddies were professionals? There wasn't a nebbish in the group. But you wouldn't have it. You wouldn't have any of it. And so you ran. You ran and tore a chapter out of your family's life. And a piece out of my heart.
I was screaming, Mama. But you couldn't hear me. And you couldn't see me for who I was. I didn't want your life. I didn't want to be in the kitchen with the brisket or the fish balls or the crab lock or the cool or go out with the boys that turn into men that I don't want to marry. It was all for start. I am not you, Mama. I am me, Rachel Fisher.
Parker Posey, welcome to Fresh Air. In the movie, you play an actress who's making, you know, a movie within this movie, and that movie is called Home for Purim.
Right.
And it's kind of set in World War II in a small town, and, like, you know,
it's a period film.
It's a period film. Yeah. And you know, the daughter and the son are home for Purim. And you're
That's
the daughter.
Right. And yes, and the mother's dying.
And there's a bunch of kind of Jewish and Yiddish jokes in this movie within the movie. Did you need translations?
I did a little research or talking to my Jewish friends. Chris Guest kind of got this idea. He was visiting Jamie. His wife was working down south in Georgia, and he's just hanging out. And we're hanging out on movies. There's not really much to do unless you're working. So he had a friend there, someone that he met down south, and he said, let me take you fishing. And he's like, okay. And then they're driving through town, and they're like, let's stop by the hardware store. And they stop by the hardware store, and he's like, hold on a second, Shlomo? And it's like these, and they were like, and he's like, what? You coming to? And there were these, Southerners speaking Yiddish. And he thought that was, he couldn't believe it, you know, this is happening. And so I think that's what gave him the idea. And Chris and Eugene wrote the Home for Purim movie, and I love doing that movie within a movie stuff. I think, and I play someone who's gay as well. I bring home my lover to meet my parents.
You're playing an actor who is co-starring in this period film set in the 40s. And when For Your Consideration opens, the characters in the movie are watching a 1940s film to kind of get in character. You know, to help get them in the spirit of 1940s
right.
movies. Did you do that too? Did you actually watch 1940s movies to see exactly what it was you were satirizing?
Yeah, I forgot which movies I watched, but, you know, when you get the call from Chris, he's like, you know, you're in this movie, and it's, you know, that kind of acting, you know, and, you know, it's that thing, you know. So everyone kind of watched these period films and did their own version of it, and it was really fun, you know. It's just kind of a strange acting when you come into the door, someone's about to open the door that you're coming into, and then you do that kind of fake kind of stop, like, or surprise, you know. There are these different kind of like acting kind of things that people did in those movies, in those melodramas that's kind of funny.
What else did you take away from those melodramas?
I think it's funny that all the women in the 40s movies kind of seem gay, and the men as well.
In what way?
They're like Joan Crawford or Betty Davis. It was a time when the women were really standing up for themselves, you know, and the men were still kind of, you know, light in the feet and dancing. And there was kind of an intensity that was really, really great back then. Especially, you know, my character in the movie, Callie Webb, has written a one-woman show called No Penis Intended. So,
because she's been a performance artist as well as an actress. And this is her performance art downtown New York club kind of thing.
Well, this is in L.A. So
it was in L.A., yeah.
No Penis Intended was a one-woman show in L.A. And she has an improv background as well and a comedy background. But she's not very funny, and she's really angry.
What were some of the qualities you wanted to make sure you got to satirize when you did the one-woman show within the movie?
Honestly, I'm taking it seriously. I mean, I know it's funny, but as I'm doing it, I'm meaning it. And then afterwards, you start laughing, you know. And then you just, because you're thinking about these people for months. There's, you're developing empathy for them. It's not like you're going, oh, how can I make fun of this person? You're going, how can I reveal this person?
How did you start working with, you know, the crew that you made for your consideration with Christopher Guest, Harry Shearer, Eugene Levy, et cetera?
I think in 1991 or 1992, I auditioned for a movie called The Coneheads that Lorne Michaels produced. And I met Lorne Michaels, and I knew that I wouldn't get the part of Connie Conehead, but I thought that she should have friends. And I convinced Lorne Michaels to give me and my friend Joey parts as Connie's friends. And he did. And then a year or so goes by, and I get a call over a Christmas holiday. I was down south in Laurel, Mississippi, and to audition for a recurring part on Murphy Brown. So I got to fly out to L.A. and audition for the recurring part on Murphy Brown, which I did not get. But within that week, I met Christopher Guest. And Christopher Guest had called Lorne Michaels and asked him if he knew anyone who could improvise, and Lorne Michaels had recommended me. And Chris met me and Reese Witherspoon for the part of Libby May Brown in Waiting for Guffman. And I basically just sat down with Chris for about, I don't remember, half an hour, 45 minutes, and he says he can get a sense of whether people can do this kind of work or not.
You've been called by a lot of people, you know, like Queen of the Indies, Queen of Independent Films.
Oh, I love how you say that.
What?
Say it again. You're like Queen of the Indies.
So
I know, it's so silly.
Well, how did you start getting into independent films?
I went to SUNY Purchase for acting school, so I was doing student films there. And it was around when I left in 91, that was kind of when the whole independent film movement started. And I met Hal Hartley, who also went to Purchase. And my first job out of college was a soap opera called As the World Turns. And I had worked with Hal, and then I got cast in Rick Linklater's Days Confused. And I was just around New York at that time. You know, now, with the community in New York is like, you know, UCB and improvisers. Back then, in the early 90s, there was an independent film community, and I was around doing readings of scripts of directors and writers, and I would go out to L.A. and audition for something and not get it, or get an independent film while I was out in L.A. that shot in New York for like 25, you know, days or something. So it's just kind of where my life was leading me.
When you started making independent films, did it hurt your indie cred to tell people that you'd worked on As the World Turns? Was that something that you told people about or not?
I think it's really cool that I worked on a soap opera.
What did you learn from working on a soap opera?
How to take naps.
Mm-hmm. Wait, did you not have a big part?
Well, you would wake up incredibly early, and you'd have a 7 o'clock rehearsal, and then you may not work until 11 o'clock. So I would get a full face of hair and makeup on, and my wardrobe, and put on two robes because it was freezing, and then I'd get into bed and just like go back to sleep. So I learned how to relax in between as I was at work. And also, the material is so hard to do because a lot of it just doesn't make any sense, and there's a lot of exposition. And you learn how to work under pressure. And you couldn't even, if something was bad and you're like, whoa, I barely even, got that line out. They would air it. And so then you go like, okay, now if I want to do that again, I have to like curse or something to get them to do it.
And be like, they couldn't run it that way.
Yeah. And it was, sometimes some of the directors would let me have fun with it and kind of make fun of it at the same time as I was doing it.
Well, this bed that you napped on, was that a bed on the set?
No, it was in the dressing room. And there were these intercoms that would, they'd call your name out over the intercoms. And then you'd go downstairs and then you'd act with another actor who like slept on his face. And so he had like these sleep wrinkles on one side. You're like, wow, late night, huh? And then you'd switch places with him so that the other camera wouldn't see his sleep wrinkles.
That's really funny.
And he had been on the soap since he was like 5 years old. But you get some really good stories. I was amazed at the actors there. So early in the morning, and then they're just kind of walking through it, and then by the time you get in front of camera, Colleen Zenk, who played my Aunt Barbara, would turn to me with a face full of tears. You'd be like, where did that come from? It's a certain style that they're really doing, and some people are really good at it.
Well, my guest is Parker Posey, and why don't we listen to another scene from one of your movies? And this is from Kicking and Screaming, which was a 1995 independent film. And you play a senior in college. Your boyfriend has graduated, and he's hanging out with a group of guys who don't have much in the way of jobs or prospects. But he's been taking classes again. And here's the scene.
Make me sad, Skippy. This big idea about you learning and coming back to school and taking all these classes. You haven't done a stitch of reading since you've been here. You get on my case about my studies. I mean, really.
God, I begged you to stay on Prozac.
You used me to come back to school. That's what you did.
Because I could care less about your stupid classes. Is G.I. Joe a safe doll to give kids at Christmas? What's the effect of TV weathermen on society?
My classes. Let's talk about your classes, okay? Your dinosaur classes and all that. Let's talk about your friends. Let's talk about how you guys are all in love with each other and how sick you make me with your stupid games, those trivia games. Ding, Max loves Grover. Ding, Skippy does Otis. Ding, they all do each other and it drives me nuts. Ding that, Skippy. Get a life.
Nice dime store psychoanalysis.
You know what? I can't stand you. I can't stand that. Your shoes, your pants, that shirt you're wearing, your hair. Your hair drives me crazy. Just get out, okay? I have homework to do. Just get out. Get out. Get out. 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 Go.
That's my guest Parker Posey in a scene from Kicking and Screaming. Do you think in the 90s, when you were making a lot of independent films and you were really becoming known for those independent films, that there was something that was called like a Parker Posey role or a Parker Posey type? Did you become identifiable in that way?
Yeah, I did. And I remember someone told me that I was like an adjective, and I was really hurt. I was in an elevator at Sundance, and there's another actress, and she goes, "You're like an adjective." Yeah, there was. And then there were other things that I would read, like, or someone would say, like, yeah, there's a part in a script that, for a Parker Posey type, and I would not have heard what that script was or what them. I wouldn't have gotten asked to do it.
So what was a Parker Posey type?
I guess sassy and funny and...
kind of eccentric.
I don't know. Funny, yeah.
And kind of, like, funny sexy? Like, sexy but in a comedy.
Yeah, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's so weird. You know, movies now really shy away from the women being funny, and you get, like, you read scripts and you're up for something, or there's talk about you and, you know, this guy comedy. He already has a girlfriend that, you know, I'm not going to play, but... there's like another part for a funny girl, and they always end up getting cut. Those parts get cut. And that's the Parker Posey type that I would have been right for.
The kind of role that would get cut?
The friend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it seems like, you know, for many people, but for young actresses, that independent films have such more variety in the kind of roles they offer than the big, you know, like multiplex movies do.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find, I mean, did you ever wonder, like, if you'd gotten started in the multiplex kind of movies, where would you have fit?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was heartbroken when I didn't get the part in Reality Bites.
The Janine Garofalo part. Mm-hmm.
I was told that I got it, and then I was told that I didn't have it, and I was devastated. But, you know, as you get older and you see that your career, you know, takes its own shape and you have your own path that is really not up for you or your will or what you want, there's like a certain kind of design to it. And, you know, in the periods that I'm not working, I'm learning or I'm thinking about things, and... you know, these parts come to me. So I don't know if there hadn't been an independent film movement where, especially now, I mean, where I would fit in. I'm really grateful for that time. I feel really like I was a part of something that was really great.
I think one of the great things about a lot of the independent films, particularly like when you were getting started, is that, you know, many of them were much more literary than you could find. By literary, I don't necessarily mean about books, but the writing was just like really sharp. There were smart people talking to each other, so the dialogue wasn't just like a lot of witty retorts. Take a film like Day Trippers.
That was
so well written and performed, and its characters, you know, it's a family, and there's, you know, someone in publishing and someone who's like a wannabe playwright, a little pretentious. And do you have a favorite scene from that film?
I think when Mom passes out, we had such a good time on that movie. Like, Ann Mira could barely say anything without me just laughing in her face. And Lee Ev and I are friends. We've done like 3 or 4 movies together. And Greg Mottola is just so lovely and smart. There was one scene where Mira goes running out of the car, and she passes out. And I say, "Don't go into the light, Mom." And Lee Ev was like, I was like, "Greg, I want to say that line." And Lee Ev was like, "Oh, God. Don't say that." And I'm like, "What do you mean? It's funny." He goes, "Oh, don't do it." And then, like, the movie came out, and Leah was like, "You were right. You got a really big laugh."
How did you know that you were really right? Fun. You know, it's so easy to be talked out of something.
Right? I was like, just let me say it. I had so much more confidence then than I do now.
Is that true? Why is that true?
You just don't think that much when you're young. You don't think that much before you speak. And your instincts are usually better than anything you can really think about. But what else did I... You know, that movie was like a 7 or 18 day shoot. And Greg Mottola hasn't directed anything since. And he went out to L.A. and, you know, directed some TV and got some jobs, thank God. But it's, like, really hard. That whole group of people, a lot of them got co-opted by the studio system. And, you know, people waiting for Julia Roberts to read their script in order to get their movie made. And then the $2 million movie became a $19 million movie. And it just kind of lost its place.
I always think, like, the reward you get for being a really good actor or actress nowadays is that you get to carry a gun on screen. You get a big high-paying role, and you learn how to carry a gun. Have you ever, like, had to do the gun thing on screen, or have you been able to avoid all that? Yeah.
Yeah, I was in Blade 3. I don't know if you saw this film, Terry.
Blade 3, I did not.
It's a vampire film. It's part of the vampire trilogy. That Wesley Snipes is in. And, yeah, I show up on set, and it's just a bunch of people, like, pow, 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 you know, a bunch of guys, like, and then we're going to, and they start, like, play fighting. You're like, it's like a 11-year-old. It's funny and charming, but, like, you can't believe that money's being spent like this. And, so then they're like, and here you have a gun. And I got to hold a gun. I got to be a vampire, and which was kind of fun, you know. And I wore teeth and I had the fangs and the eye contacts. And sometimes I felt like I was in a B movie, and sometimes I acted like I was, and sometimes I didn't. You know, it was like...
Well, after,
and some people come up to me, some people love it, you know. Like, yeah, you were really hot in Blade.
Like, oh. No, you were in Superman Returns, and you played Lex Luthor's girlfriend. So what's it like after being on, like, so many independent films, where you're cutting costs wherever you can and doing these, like, quick shoots to suddenly, you know, to be on one, or like a really big movie like a Superman film? What are some of the differences in the way things are done? And, you know, the shortcuts that you have to take to save money on an indie film versus the way things is done on, say, a Superman set.
Yeah, when you have $200 million, you're going to time out your work in a particular way as a director and as a whole, like, group of people. So there was, like, 800 on the crew in Superman Returns. 800 people we shot in Australia. And on an independent film where you don't have a monitor and the director standing by camera and you have 20 days, you don't have a lot of takes, and you really have to think about your shots, and you have to time it out. So I'm used to doing takes, being good in the first, like, 1, 2, 3, 4 takes, and then, like, take 4 to 7 will kind of be like, I wasn't even there, I don't know. And then maybe by 9, something else starts to happen. When you do a big budget movie like Superman Returns, you're waiting around for, like, you could be waiting around for the entire day for Bryan Singer, who's very talented, to figure out optically what he wants this image, particular image, to be and how much weight it's going to have. So it's like, you know, it's dealing kind of like a comic book reality. And it was like going into a huge costume dock. You know, the costume department on Superman Returns, we got to come up with a whole story of this woman and down to her shoes. You know, I don't want pointed shoes. I want round-toed shoes and just this kind of look. So you get to be creative in areas that cost, like wardrobe on these big movies, or look or design. But there's also something, there is a stress factor that is present when you're making a $200 million movie that's not there when you're making a, you know, $1 million movie.
Is the stress passed on to the actors?
Mm-hmm.
How? Like, how did you feel the stress?
You know, there's a certain amount of protection that you have to kind of get ready for when you're working on a Hollywood movie, or can get in the way of creativity. I mean, that's the thing with, like, with Christopher Guest's movies. He puts so much trust in the actors, and he just lets them go off. And when someone's kind of allowed to go off, who's, you know, talented and all that, it's just like so much more comes across. There's so much more that's revealed. And sometimes I think with money, there's so much pressure and so many people kind of watching what you're doing that it can be a little withheld.
Let's talk a little bit about your life. You grew up in Mississippi. Tell us something about where you grew up.
Well, I was born in Baltimore, Maryland. My dad was stationed in Vietnam, and he left for that. He got drafted when I was like around one. I'm a twin. And so we lived in Baltimore for till I was like three, and then we went down. My mom, when my dad was in Vietnam, drove home to Shreveport, Louisiana, where she was from. And then my dad got back, and we lived in Monroe, Louisiana. And I was part of, that's where I started dancing, and Linda Lavender's School of Ballet. She was my first ballet teacher, and kind of like the first kind of thing where I was like, this is what I want to do. I want to be on stage. And my dad worked at a car dealership for his uncle, Truman Van Veckhoven, in Louisiana. Has all these Cadillac dealerships. And he got offered a job in Laurel, Mississippi. And when I was 12, we moved to Laurel, which is a tiny, tiny town. Much smaller than Monroe, and there were like 8 girls in the ballet class. So it was kind of a sad time for me. But North Carolina School of the Arts was doing some kind of thing in Jackson, and I took a class with them, and then I applied for their summer program. And I went there for ballet, and then I tried to get into the ballet department for school, and I didn't get in. And my dad called the dean of the school and said, "What do I tell my daughter? She's going to be really upset." And he said, "Tell her she's an actress." So it was then when I started acting. And I had been told that before, but it always kind of embarrassed me. I'd been told by teachers because I was kind of a ham, kind of, you know, a daydreamer. My parents thought I had a learning disability, and I was always just kind of head in the clouds.
So when the ballet, when the person from the school who turned you down said, "Tell her she's an actor and not a dancer," did he actually see acting potential in you, or is he just trying to make you feel better?
I think he was serious. Yeah, he was like, we almost accepted her personality alone. Like, I was such a, like, teacher's pet, I guess. I was loved, you know, the freedom that, you know, these schools are amazing, like Interlochen or NCSA, these programs where you can, as a kid, be around other artists. I was thrilled. And so, yeah, when he said, you know, "Tell her she's an actress," it made sense to me at the age of 12. I said, that's it, you know. But my parents were always, like, observant and kind of, you know, like, really, you know, eccentric people. And I was always kind of observing my surroundings because it's kind of, there's a lot to observe in the South.
Well, Parker Posey, it's been great to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. I hope I made sense.
Parker Posey is starring in the new comedy For Your Consideration.